I'm available to start at right tackle.
You can't see when I have clothes on.
Right. Well, there's not an even playing field. There's never been an even playing field. There never will be an even playing field.
But... What shampoo do you use on your hair?
You don't need to be Superman to play in this offense.
You're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome, Badgers fans, to another episode of The Red Zone. We got Jesse Temple here for a second appearance to talk about the Badgers' first two games and their upcoming matchup against BYU. How you doing, Jesse?
I'm good, Jason. Thanks for having me on again. I wasn't sure after the first one whether I'd ever be invited back.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the listeners loved you, and that's why we're having you back again. And we're recording in a car once again, so I think it went well last time, and hopefully it's a good location for us again.
I guess it's become kind of our thing. The sound quality is optimal, so hopefully the listeners appreciate the incredible sound quality on this particular podcast.
I'm not sure if optimal is the right word, but no one's going to, like, walk into the room and start making noise.
Yeah, so that's the real reason.
So we've at least got that going for us. Well, we just got done this. We're recording this on a Monday. We just got done with Paul Christ's weekly presser, and pretty interesting injury report today. Two guards, Bo Benshaw and John Dietzen, really probably their two best guards on the questionable this week. How big of a concern is this, do you think? I think if one of them is able to play, then you can survive with, you know, that person and Kapoy playing. But if both those guys are out, is going on their first road trip, does that really hurt their offensive line, you think?
I think it's a pretty big deal, but of course, as you said, it's early in the week right now, and who knows how healthy those guys will be by the time the game plays. You know, it seemed like Bo Benchwall indicated he might have been able to play, at the end of that game on Saturday. And, Dietzen has kind of battled ankle injuries for the longest time. So we'll have to see whether those guys play. But if, and it's a big if, neither of those guys can go, it's a huge deal. Now, Micah Kapoy was able to slide over and play right guard when Bo went out. But, you know, then you're asking, like Michael Dieter was talking today, like Erdman or something like that could come in and play. Yeah. But, you know, that's somebody that doesn't have a ton of experience. And that's a really tough environment against BYU. And, the offensive line is the heartbeat of the offense. I mean, so it changes a lot. I still think that they'll, be able to run the ball and do all the things that they want, but it might not be as effective.
Well, yeah, I guess that remains to be seen if they're able to run the ball. I'm sure it's going to be more difficult to run the ball against a team like BYU anyway than these first two games. And if you're missing both your top two guards, then it's going to be we're going to really see what Jonathan Taylor's made of then.
Yeah, definitely.
If he doesn't have quite the help that
is big.
If he doesn't have quite the help that he had against FAU, what'd you make of that Taylor performance? I mean, he's a guy that came out of nowhere after fall camp, and now he seems like he might be their number one running back, possibly even when Shaw comes back. So, do you think he can keep this up?
I mean, he was awesome, first of all. Like, 26 carries, 223 yards, 3 touchdowns. And as you said, when fall camp began, I thought, there's just no room for this guy. He's fourth or fifth on the depth chart. He might be talented, but why waste a year playing if he's going to get 15 carries the whole year? And then all of a sudden in fall camp, Tywan Deal gets hurt, and he, as everybody knows, made the most of that scrimmage, scored a couple touchdowns, and has been off and running. Do I think he's going to get 200 yards every game? No. I mean, FAU's defense got shredded in week one by Navy. Granted, that was a triple option offense, and they ran the ball 68 of 78 times. But that's not the type of run defense you're going to face in the Big Ten, or even against BYU as a really good front seven. But he has all the makings of a star. And you're right. That's the question now is, where's Bradrick Shaw in this? Is he still starter? If he's healthy, and we should mention at least right now he's listed as questionable with a right leg injury. It's tough to take a guy off the field when you're the Big Ten Freshman of the Week and the Big Ten Co-Offensive Player of the Week. So it's a good problem to have, but I don't know how you take that guy off the field.
And I do feel like we should pump the brakes a little bit on the Taylor hype, because it is one game that he played really well against Utah State too, but like we mentioned, those are two defenses that are going to be worse than what you're typically going to be facing against BYU or in the Big Ten. I want to see a bigger sample size to see exactly how good this kid is. I wasn't really watching him much in fall camp because he was the fourth or fifth guy. He wasn't getting a whole lot of reps. I don't want to take anything away from him. His first two performances were amazing, and he looks like he could be the best running back on this roster. But I think the biggest question now is how, you know, like you mentioned, how does this kind of complicates their rotation, because it's hard to keep him off the field the way he's playing right now. But Bradrick Shaw is a guy who, I mean, he was your starting running back just a couple weeks ago. And, like, what do you do? Do you split their carries and just play Chris James on third down? Do you, does Bradrick Shaw get pushed out a little bit? Or, I mean, it's a good problem to have, like you mentioned. But I'm really curious to see when Bradrick Shaw does come back. And he is listed as questionable right now for this game at BYU. But whenever he does come back, it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how they distribute these carries.
Yeah, first of all, they've got an incredible 1-2 punch right now with Taylor and Shaw, assuming Shaw is healthy. And let's not forget that Chris James rushed for 101 yards in week two.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a pretty strong performance, 6.3 yards per carry. I know that was really important for him because he didn't have his best game in week one, 5 carries, 15 yards. You know, he lost a fumble. He had a penalty that cost him some big yardage. But to me, at least right now, I think that I don't even know if it really matters who starts between Shaw and Taylor, but I think those are your top two guys, and Chris, to me, would be that third down type of back. But, yeah, it's John Settle is sitting there in the running back room trying to figure it out, but how many running backs coach in America are envious of his situation right now?
Yeah, definitely. Should we be worried about their offense? Because, I mean, it's a team they've scored 90 points over these first two games, but you know, in both games there have been times where the offense looked really bad, I guess, for lack of a better term. I mean, they didn't score any points for the first, you know, 28 minutes of the Utah State game. And then against FIU, they put up a lot of yards but had a lot of miscues that kept them from putting more points on the board. And like you mentioned, for that FAU defense who got shredded by Navy, and they got shredded by a lot of teams at the end of last year too, to only put up 31, not the most impressive performance, even though they still won comfortably. But is there reason for any concern offensively, you think, whether it's Hornibrook's performance on Saturday, or just kind of some of the miscues they had, or do you think it's just sort of early season stuff that they'll work out pretty easily?
At this point, I don't think there's cause to sound the alarm bells or anything like that. And it's, yeah, they admitted this afterward. They left a ton of points on the board. They did. If you get 564 yards of total offense, and you're still somehow in a fight, you know, at halftime or into the third quarter against FAU, I mean, that speaks to some of the mistakes that they've made. As we've said before, and it's pretty obvious, this game against BYU is going to be a significant challenge, you know, far tougher than these first two games, and I'm sure the fans out there are going to be ready to try and storm the field at the end if this game's close and they can spring an upset. But there are some things that they need to clean up, and it's surprising, I think, because from what we saw in fall camp, it looked like this team was, you know, going to roll through opponents, and granted they were playing against each other. But, you know, you've got, like, Alex Hornibrook's interception. Hey, a quarterback is going to make a mistake. He's allowed to throw a pick. I think he went, it was like 7 games or something for Wisconsin quarterback without an interception. You know, a goal line stand, to have 6 yards to go and 4 downs to get there and not be able to score, that's a little concerning, because that's Wisconsin's bread and butter, is the offensive line, and I know that Michael Dieter and some of those other guys weren't pleased with their pad level and their inability to punch it in. But to go back to your first question, I don't think it's a great cause for concern right now, because they still scored 90 points in these first two games, and they've been able to run the ball pretty effectively.
And, you know, I don't think a lot of people, or at least some people in the fan base, are panicking about Alex Hornibrook right now. But, you know, I think when you look at it on the whole, it's one bad game, I think. I think he didn't play well against FAU, but I think it's one bad game. I don't think there's any reason to panic about his play, or definitely there's no reason to put Jack Cohn in the game, so, which I've heard a lot, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think this BYU game is going to be, you know, a really good barometer for the offense. You know, BYU struggled the first few weeks of their season, but it's more offensive struggles for them. Their defense has been playing pretty well and keeping them in games. So to see what this offense can do on the road, against a team like that, it's going to be really interesting. But I mean, going into the season, I think people thought this BYU game could be, you know, a pretty difficult game. And I think you look at BYU, and maybe they don't seem as threatening anymore with the way their offense has played the first few weeks of the season. But do you still think this is a the game fans should be worried about. I think Wisconsin's, you know, favored by 13.5 points, but do you think this is a really losable game?
Well, first of all, let me say that I think fans are always worried about everything. you know, this is not the end of the world because Alex threw an interception, and no, Jack Cohn is not suddenly going to be the starting quarterback. Everything will be okay.
Especially the quarterback position. That's right. What they worry about the most.
Right. But, you know, I think this was a game before the season started. I think most people would circle on a schedule and say, wow, that should be really tough. And you're right. BYU's offense hasn't been great. You know, they won, I think it was Portland State in the opener. It wasn't one of those games where they blew them out. And then they were shut out against LSU and lost against Utah. But the environment is tough. I don't know if altitude makes that much of a difference out there on the field, but that's going to be a change. This team hasn't usually had to face a true road game in non-conference play. They played some biggies, you know, obviously LSU twice and Alabama, but, you know, to go into another team's home stadium this early in the season, it will be a real challenge. And I think, as I said before, BYU's front seven is very good. Two of their top tacklers last year were their linebackers that are back. So, yeah, this is exactly the type of challenge that they need at this point. Then they have the bye week, and then, of course, start Big Ten play. So I expect this to be maybe one of those Big Ten-type games because BYU, really, they've been one of the most consistent non-Power 5 conference teams in college football. They've been to a bowl game every year since 2005. They won 9 games last year, and they've beaten some very good Power 5 teams, it seems like, every year. So, yeah, this will be a really, really good test for Wisconsin.
It's going to be interesting to see if they can keep that bowl streak going if they start 1-3 here.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough. This might be the year.
I am interested. Actually, one of the things I am really interested in this week is the altitude aspect of it. And I maybe that's because I don't really know how much it'll affect because I've never really been at a place that's that high above sea level that I can remember. I mean, do you have any experience exercising? And
no.
Have you ever visited Denver or anything like that? Or
I've been out to the West Coast, but I mean, I wasn't out there having to play a football game or something like that. I honestly don't know. And Paul Christ was asked about that at his press conference on Monday. And I mean, what can he say? Like, you do the best you can to prepare your team for the environment. He's like, it might be hot out there, but we're not going to all of a sudden go indoors and crank up the heat. You prepare as best you can, and you hope that when the game starts, you have a plan in place and are able to make adjustments as needed.
And I will say, you know, I actually looked at the weather forecast, and, you know, sometimes in Utah you can get, like, those days in the 90s, this point in the year sometimes, but it looks like it's going to be 70s, like, really good weather. I mean, not too hot. So I think that's an advantage for Wisconsin. I honestly think if they had to deal with the altitude and the fact of it being, you know, really hot, I think that actually could have played a really big factor. But, maybe it'll play a big factor, maybe it won't, but I guess there's really no way to know, but it's something interesting that you don't normally get in some of these typical road games. Before I let you go, I do want to touch on the defense real quick. We haven't talked about them at all. A couple big plays they gave up on Saturday against FAU. I don't think we have to worry about the defense too much against this BYU game with the way BYU's offense has looked, but as a big picture question, do you think that this defense can still be as good as it was last year? I mean, they've only allowed, 20 points in 2 games, but they have had a couple miscommunications. I think the biggest thing is maybe these first 2 teams have played really fast, and they've struggled with that a little bit. But is it too early to tell how good this defense can be, or what are kind of your thoughts on that side of the ball?
I feel like I've said since fall camp began that I thought this was a top 20 defense. I mean, there was no reason to believe it wouldn't be with all the talent they returned and, you know, having confidence in what Jim Leonard can bring. And I still feel that way. Like, the blown coverage against FAU, it's going to happen. Is it unacceptable in game day against a team like that? Yeah, but I think it's something that they'll learn from, and I talked to Derek Tindall about that after the game, and he said sometimes that's what happens when you get paced. As you said, FAU tried to go up-tempo a little bit, and that meant that Derek didn't necessarily communicate with Nick Nelson, hey, there's not going to be a guy over the top, because I think each of those guys thought that there would be safety help, and there wasn't, and that's how the guy got wide open for the 63-yard touchdown. But on the whole, I think the defense has been pretty darn good, and the thing that has stood out to me is the play of the outside linebackers. I mean, those top 3 guys with Andrew Van Ginkle, Leon Jacobs, and Garrett Dooley, it seems like they've been living in the backfield. And as you said, you know, like these first 2 games, it's not necessarily the best indication of how they'll play against Big Ten teams because it's just not that quality of play. But to me, I've been really impressed with that aspect, particularly when you consider that you lose a T.J. Watt and a Vince Beagle, guys who are NFL draft picks, and it's like I don't think there's like a marked drop off in production at that spot. So, you know, they're getting pressure in the backfield, and I think that makes life easier on the secondary. So I think this this is still one of the top defenses around.
Yeah, I think it's sort of TBD on this deep. I think one of the interesting things, and it was brought up today at the press conference, is that with these teams, these two offenses playing so fast, like, we don't really know what their pass rush is going to look like on a consistent basis this year yet, because they're getting the ball out quickly. You know, they're hurrying to the line. You know, and it's just different than what they're going to see week in and week out, I think. So I think they learned a lot of lessons in these first two games. I think it's really good for them that they didn't, you know, start against a team like Alabama or LSU this year, and they could kind of go through these kind of growing pains, if so to speak, these first couple games. But I'm curious to see, you know, when you get into conference play, how good the defense actually is, and against teams like, you know, Nebraska, Northwestern, and things like that. Well, thanks for joining me, Jesse. I really appreciate you coming on again, and I'm sure you're a listener favorite. But, and thanks for letting us use your car as a venue for the podcast.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on, Jason.
I'm joined by Badgers kicker Hafia Baglinone. How you doing, Hafe?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Yep. How are, you know, is the back still feeling good and everything?
Yeah, feeling pretty good, you know. Two games under the belt, just looking forward to the next one. Just keep going with it.
Do you feel maybe even more confident than you did before after going through that and having the whole offseason to kind of get back in shape?
Yeah, it definitely felt good, you know, not having to rush through anything, just kind of doing with things the right way and kind of taking the time with rehab and kind of every step really just being very careful and just, you know, allowing my body to feel good and feel natural out there. So, you know, feeling like I'm more than 100% right now, feeling as good as I felt in a while. So really just looking forward for my next opportunity and, you know, just excited to be on the field with the guys and to be enjoying the game as a player again.
What happened on the miss on Saturday?
What miss?
No, I got scared that you didn't actually miss one and I was misremembering.
Yeah, no. It was just bad contact, but, you know, everything else looked good. Operation looked good. You know, I'll make the next one. You know, just got to take advantage of the opportunities. Sit out there for a little bit, you know, take some time to loosen up. But, you know, we'll be back on the next one. It's all about the next kick mentality now.
I know, you know, where you're from in Brazil, it's, I think, about 2,500 feet above sea level.
Yeah.
I looked up the other day.
Yeah.
You guys are going to BYU.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, 4,500 feet. Do you feel, you know, the altitude in Brazil? Do you remember, whether it's exercising or something, is there a difference at that elevation? Or?
It's just tough because that's all you know when you're growing up there and you're born and raised there. You don't really know anything different. And definitely not a major change at that point, but for us, you know, going into the altitude as a kicker, you know, the ball flies better and flies deeper. So, you know, we're excited about the opportunity. You know, it's going to be a good team in BYU. Just really looking forward. It's a beautiful stadium, you know, beautiful setup for us.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, like, how much that could affect your kicking and how the ball, how far you may be able to kick and you know, at BYU versus...
Yeah, I guess it all depends on the situation, you know, whether it's a windy game or not. You know, you see Camp Randall, it's kind of a day-by-day, and I'm assuming there's the same thing. And, you know, with the altitude, you obviously add a couple, you know, 3 to 4 yards on every kick and, you know, a little bit more on kickoff, so... You know, it's just going to be one of those, you know, pregame decisions where I'm just going to talk to Coach Malhoff, Coach Herring, kind of decide it right there. But, you know, assuming it's going to be a pretty good range.
Do you get pretty excited to go to a place where the ball's going to sail farther?
Yeah, I mean, it's always exciting. You know, you get the opportunity to maybe hit a couple farther ones and, you know, get that under the belt. But, you know, just excited to play again, you know, play another game. Everything's still kind of surreal to me that I'm back. And, you know, last year I only had 3 games, so I'm still, you know, trying to be careful and, you know, make sure I have the long season ahead of me. But, you know, just trying to take advantage of every opportunity. Obviously, with the altitude, it's going to be exciting, and, you know, it's going to be cool.
Yeah. Are you going to do anything different as a team for the altitude? As far as, I guess, maybe not for you as much, but maybe to commission the guys better. Have you heard anything like that?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about it, and probably the kickers will be the last to be affected on that. You know, for us, it doesn't really change as much, but, you know, I'm sure they have a good game plan and, you know, everything set up for us to succeed and to be the best version of ourselves out there.
Yeah. Growing up in Brazil, did you But when's the first time you actually, you know, got introduced to American football?
So actually the first time was on my first week on my study abroad in Tennessee, Chattanooga, and kind of all the boarding students were kind of forced to go to this game. It was kind of the bonding experience, and I watched the first half and went home, and, you know, it was like kind of this is not for me, and kind of moved on from there. And, you know, later on in that year, I joined the team for the last game and kind of, you know, did the kickoffs there for that game. And they said, if you keep working, you might have a chance to play college ball and whatnot. And, you know, really tacked on to the opportunity and, you know, continued to work. And next thing you know, I'm watching, you know, the first game that I'm watching, I'm, you know, I'm on an official visit here and there. And it's kind of moving around, and then really just fell in love with the game junior year. I continued to progress in year, and then I ended up here.
I see you went from this game isn't for me to kicking for the team, like, later in the season. How did that happen?
So basically, on the boarding school, we had a system of points where you had to rack up as many points for, like, each semester with, like, a sport. And since I played club soccer, I didn't really got any points for my school, so they said I had to join a team. And it was either pre-basketball, like, swimming or football. So I decided to join football, and just, you know, I said I'm a soccer player, so I'll just kick a couple of balls, just be a backup for this one game. And they kind of just let me do it. And then my first day, I got to kick a 50-yarder, and they're like, no, we want you to actually play, like, we don't care, you just showed up on Wednesday, the game's Friday. But, and then from that point on, I just really decided to focus on that, and, you know, it's been a blessing ever since.
Just had to do it with earning points for
It was basically like you had to have enough points as, like, throughout the seasons, and, you know, make sure you're either doing community service or something here or there, just that way you're involved with the community and you're involved with the classmates and whatnot. You know, in a boarding school, is a lot of things are big, anything interaction and, you know, ways for you to meet people on your experience. So that was kind of just one of the things, and, you know, ended up being a blessing.
How long did it take you to start calling football, soccer, and American football?
Took me about a good 2 years, you know. Definitely, you know, growing up in Brazil, soccer is, you know, the only thing in my mind. And, you know, when they'll say it's football, you know, here and there, and they'll say, like, soccer, and I'll be just like, no, like, buddy, that's, like, it's football. And they'll be like, no, like, Brazil is like a powerhouse on that. I know a thing or two. So it just always kind of go back and forth. But, you know, kind of the force of habit, I've been here for 7 years, so it just kind of sticks with you.
You miss playing soccer?
Oh, yeah. I miss it every day. Don't quote me on that. Don't tell coaches, because definitely miss it a lot. But, you know, I'm just thankful for my opportunity. You know, what I get to do here, you know, be a part of this team, it's a lot of kids' dreams. So, you know, I'm living it, and I'm just enjoying every moment.
Do you still get to, you know, play any pickup games of soccer or anything like that?
No.
No.
Yeah, no. coaches are not very fond of that. So I don't do it as much.
At all, right?
At all. Not at all. So,
Are there any other, you know, big soccer fans on the team? Or?
Dario was a huge soccer fan when he was here. Alec James watched quite a bit of soccer. My roommate TJ Edwards likes soccer a bit. We all kind of get together and play FIFA a lot. So it's kind of a good bonding experience. But, you know, a lot of the guys here and there like it, especially World Cup years and whatnot. So next year will be pretty big again. But, you know, Dario was for sure the biggest one.
Yeah, I just started getting into it the last few years.
Started
rooting for Everton.
So, it's nice.
You have a team, or?
I'm a fan of São Paulo, but I was also a fan of Chelsea, and, you know, just kind of wherever there's a lot of Brazilians, I just love watching them play and the way they play free. So, you know, Real, a lot of the guys go there too. But, you know, PSG right now, obviously with Neymar and Lucas and all the guys there, it's exciting. But yeah.
Yeah, what did you think of the Neymar transfer?
I was happy. I mean, being a Neymar fan and being a Brazilian fan, kind of in Brazil, all that matters is winning the Ballon d'Or, and he hadn't done that yet, so it doesn't matter how many titles you win. You know, if you want to be one of the greats in our country, you got to win that, and in order to do that, you got to be the best player in your team and the best player in your league. So I think it was a good move. Obviously, the money didn't hurt him. So, you know, excited for him. The way he's been playing the first few games is pretty cool.
All right, thanks, Hoff. Good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to Jesse and Hoff for joining me on this week's episode. You can follow Jesse on Twitter at Jesse Temple and follow me on Twitter at Jason_Galloway. If you haven't already, subscribe to The Red Zone on iTunes and keep visiting Madison.com for all of our Badgers football coverage. We go a little bit more in depth on Jonathan Taylor's performance and whether it's sustainable or not in this week's film room session, which I posted on Tuesday, so make sure you go check that out. And I'll also have a my weekly mailbag column on Friday, so check that out as well. Thanks for listening.